Hi, everybody. This is Ben Starr with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And a big welcome back today to Julian Joyello, who's
been
a little absent. Great to have you back, Julian.
It is fantastic to be back here in the studio here. I've been quite busy with lots of good stuff, and I'll be able to make some official announcements about that in the future. But a lot of exciting stuff for me in the acting realm of
very
things.
Special news, and we can't wait to hear the whole scoop and the whole deal of what's going
on.
Yeah,
we'll let you know, but today we have so much to talk about, I'm so excited to do it with you guys, of course, here on The Positive Mind. Yeah. And this is The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. I know it's been a little while since you've heard me do that intro for you, but this is Julian Joyello speaking, and of course, Ben Starr in the studio, and Kevin O'Donohue.
Hey, Jules, good to have you back.
Yeah, so today, yesterday, Kevin and Ben talked about belonging sort of to a group of people that lives in sports, fans, in kind of identifying with your team, and what kind of family is found among sports teams and sports fans and those kinds of groups.
Thought it was a topical way to kind of get into what's going on right now, which is the beginning of the baseball season, the end of the college basketball season,
and the beginning of the Rangers playoff series.
Sure, yeah. And you know, sports are a big deal here in New York City. It's known as a pro sports town. But as Kevin and I were talking, we realized that there's such a wider way to belong, right? There's such a wider array of ways that people belong, the groups that we belong to. So that was something that we wanted to explore a little bit further in depth today.
And to not belong.
You know,
when you see a big crowd that you want to be a part of, or a club or a group that you want to be a part of, and you're not, you know, there are many, many incidences of feeling like you don't belong.
Yeah, well, it's a serious thing, right? That social pain that you just described, Kevin.
Yeah.
In fact, there were researchers at the University of Michigan that found that physical pain and social pain actually share a sensory component in the brain. So that is to say, our brain actually doesn't draw a distinction between the two, although we may not be feeling a physical pain.
Mm-hmm.
When we're feeling that social, maybe it's a shame, a humiliation, a disapproval, a sense of being excluded, that social pain actually manifests in the brain the same way that a physical pain
might. Well, here's a question for you. How does it feel physically when you get a sense that you don't belong?
That glumness?
Yeah. Can you locate a place in your body where you feel that?
I'd say I probably feel it in deep in my gut.
And it's a unique kind of pain, because I think not belonging, feeling outside, is a unique kind of pain. And for me, I feel it in my throat. I have a very
clear sense, like a
lump in the throat. Different than, you know, when you're going to cry. But it's a definite feeling when I'm on the outside.
Sure.
I don't belong. So I was just curious how you would feel. And you feel it like in your gut.
Yeah, I think so. That social pain you talk about. And
you think of the last time you felt that?
I'd have to think about that. Yeah, I think when someone brought up a high school reunion, and I just realized, you know, even though I still have friends that I went to high school with, and I feel in a way connected to it, when I thought about the idea of going there, I felt more alienated than I did connected.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I chose not to go.
Okay. It wasn't a fear, but it was
it wasn't a fear, more of just a disconnect and alienation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you got it. I know the same feeling. I did go to my grammar school, 40-year grammar school reunion.
Wow. What was that like?
It was one of those amazed how people haven't changed at all.
Really?
And then also,
so people, a lot of people you may not have seen since you were 10.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and we brought out the old graduation book with all the pictures in it and all the sayings in it. And, you know, you could target, you know, yep, they're still the same person. But I had the feeling that I must have had when I was a student of being outside. Wow, I don't fit in here. I mean, I can go along, I can joke, I can play around, I can tell stories. But some part of me is aware that I really don't belong here.
Right. Well, like yesterday we talked about the different ways that being, you know, rooting for a sports team might be, in a way, becoming part of a greater family.
Yeah.
And belonging to this larger group. Yeah. It's kind of a social identifier, right? Yeah. And a cultural identifier, in a way.
Sure.
But, you know, today we wanted to kind of broaden that and look at some other groups and families that we can become a part of. So, you know, just off the top of my head, I mean, I'll say, you know, the one that is kind of brought up the most is friends, right?
Mm.
People say friends are the family that we choose. So sure. I think that's a big one, right? The friends we make. But it goes beyond that. Even, you know, for example, education. People mm-hmm. who study a certain field,
mm-hmm.
for example, maybe engineering majors, they might have a special bond that education majors are, you know, sharing a different bond, or people who went to, you know, University A versus University B.
Sure.
And there's religious identifiers, right? I mean, a lot of people, mm-hmm. their local house of worship has become like their family. That's like what their community revolves around.
Right.
Or the center of their kind of in-group belonging.
Yeah.
Even, you know, at the socioeconomic level, right?
Yeah.
You know, at different levels of income, people feel an identifier. Maybe some people might identify strongly with a working class background, mm-hmm. whereas, you know, people who make a lot of money, well, they try to identify in that milieu, sure. if you want to call it that. But, you know, and there, you know, there's lots of groups that people either choose to identify with or feel excluded by. And, you know, I thought it'd be good to explore those today and talk about.
It has to be good to at least periodically know that you belong somewhere. At
sure.
least, you know, you might be a loner. You know, you might spend your holidays on your own. But if you don't have a group to join periodically, then, you know, I have to say what Armand would say, then you're in trouble. You have to have a group that you can go to periodically. So, yeah, your church. Your union meeting.
Sure.
And
union numbers are dropping drastically, right?
Yeah, so that's a club, that's a group that is losing a sense of belonging. Whereas, you know, in the old days, when you were part of a union, you belonged.
That was a big extended family, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it looked out, and think about the functions that a union serves. I mean, it does take care of a lot of people. It kind of looks out for people. It protects people. Yeah.
And in some ways, it's like the payoff of a civil service job, like a policeman or a fireman. These guys hang out together. These guys live together.
Right.
I mean, you know, they belong. And so they could have a 30-year career. And when that ends, uh-oh, where am I going to belong now?
Right. Well, even then, I think a lot of people still, you know, hold on to certain identifiers. For example, last fall on Veterans Day, we had some veterans of the Marine Corps on mm-hmm. the program, and I spoke to one of them recently, and you know, we talked about his service and his experience with that, and you know, he feels very strongly that, you know, he says, no, I wasn't a Marine, I am a Marine,
right,
and there's still that identification within the group. I think military
sure.
is another one, and then even within that, you know, the enlisted guys, they are, you know, they form a sort of group, and the officers are in another group.
Yeah,
and
right.
there's like a, yeah, there's subgroups within the groups. But it'd be great to hear from, you know, later in the show from our listeners where they get that sense of belonging.
Yeah, I think it's important. I think it's a great idea.
And it's like you said, Kevin, I think it's so important and so critical for us to feel it somewhere. I mean, I'll tell you right now, I feel it right here in this studio with you and with Julian yeah. and when Armand was here with him. And that's, you know, one of the places where I do feel that belonging.
So when you walk into the studio, do you have a physical feeling? Like,
yeah, it feels good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there must be like an oxytocin rush or...
it could be. It could be.
Not dopamine, right? Well, oxytocin, serotonin.
Well, dopamine is the anticipation chemical, right? So
right.
when I walk into the studio, I probably do have a little dopamine rush anticipating yeah, getting yeah. on the air.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And you know, the feeling of respect and safety and trust with you, my colleagues here in the studio, you know, that feels good too. And there is a real sense of belonging that comes from that.
Yeah. So we want to connect this to last week's show, where we did two shows on the happy chemicals, and oxytocin is one of them. And you know you get a sense of belonging, or when you get an oxytocin rush, you know you're in the midst of feeling like you are safe. You feel like you belong.
Sure.
Yeah.
So we want to hear from people later in the show who get that sense somewhere.
Absolutely.
And at least periodically. Okay.
Yeah, let's actually bring in a little bit of Armand talking about this subject just to share with you guys.
Now, this is kind of important. Today we're going to talk about a sense of belonging, what it is and what it is not, and whether it's really important, you know. Reggie Williams, professor of nursing and psychiatry and co-author of a paper in Current Issues at the Archives of Psychiatric Nursing, said people who feel connected to the world around them feel better. Well, that makes sense, doesn't it? If you feel connected to the world around you, you feel better than if you don't feel connected to the world around you. So they spent a lot of time doing a lot of research, checking with a lot of people and coming up with this answer. Well, do you feel connected? If you feel connected, you feel better than them who don't feel connected. Because if you don't feel connected, then you're lonely. And you feel alone. And it's a very tough world when you feel alone. Well, maybe not. The researchers studied 90 people, separated them into two groups, those who were depressed and those who worked, and they did the research and they asked who feels connected. They checked on who was connected, and the ones who felt connected were suffering the least amount of depression, and the ones who felt disconnected. What does that mean, disconnected? Are you connected? To what do you belong? Here's a question. Can you say, I belong to my family? I am a family member. Well, here's part of the question that they asked. Belonging, just by nature of belonging, is not enough. Do you fit in? So you could be belong to a family, but you may not fit into the family. You know, you may feel like you're an odd person out. So then the belonging is there, but it's not there. They say people who belong who don't fit in feel worse than people who don't belong. Did you ever feel lonely in a crowd? Did you ever go in a crowd of people where there's a whole crowd of people you know, and you feel absolutely alone because you don't fit in? So what can you say you belong to? Do you belong to your job? You know, in Japan, it's an interesting thing because a lot of people build their identity on their jobs, on the actual place they work. I work for Toyota, and they have honor with their company, and they have a sense of belonging to their company, and there's a great honor and a great feeling. Most of us who work nowadays don't have a sense of that. I have it here. I mean, where I work, I have a group of people I work with, they feel like family. I mean, it's a different kind of feeling, but most people don't have that. Most people who work in America don't feel like they are connected to, well, in that kind of way, to the place they work. They have different kinds of connections, you know. They have connections like the secretaries feel connected to the other secretaries, and the managers feel connected to the managers. And the runners feel connected to the runners, the messengers. And the male people feel connected to the other male people.
And, I mean, I wanted to actually ask our audience. It's really interesting what Armand's saying here. What groups do you belong to? If you're a male person, do you identify with the rest of the male people? If you are a woman, do you identify with women? Or do you feel like you don't belong to that group? Or for the same for men? And I think it's really exciting because we belong to multiple groups, right. Almost endless amounts of groups.
And that's, I mean, think, really important.
Like, for example, I mean, I know my groups are, I'm a man, I'm a young adult, I'm in my 20s, so I identify with people in their 20s.
You're a millennial?
A millennial, for example, yes. That's a separate group from men, from human beings. Mm-hmm. I'm half Asian, so I identify with Asian culture, with other Asians. I am also Italian, so I identify with Italians. I I identify myself also as an actor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we fill in all of these groups, and these groups kind of allow us to belong in all kinds of places, whether it be I belong with New Yorkers, or whether it be I belong with people from cities, whether it be I belong with people of a similar height range to me. I mean, it's really, really interesting when it comes to psychology and groups. And I actually wanted to bring up an exciting study that was done at Harvard University by Margaret Shaw. I think Margaret Shaw is how we say her name. The Department of Psychology at Harvard University. And it was about the effect of these groups on our abilities to perform and our abilities to... our actual abilities in certain subjects. And I was telling Kevin and Ben about this a little earlier, and I wanted to bring it to you guys.
And just that it's important for the study that who the person identifies with going into the study.
Yeah.
Right? It's not like they were just thrown together. They were planted a seed.
Right.
That they could identify, oh, okay, they're talking about my Irishness or
right.
my Italianness.
Right. So there's a certain level of stereotypes that kind of come along with each kind of group. Like I know the ones that they're addressing in this study, for example, is Asian stereotypes and women stereotypes. And so what happened is Margaret at Harvard University decided to do this experiment about stereotypes and how they identify with your group.
Right, you got my attention, Harvard University.
Harvard University. And so, in short, several dozen Asian American women. So these are all Asian American women. So essentially they're part of the Asian American group, they're part of the women group, and they're also part of the Harvard group, right? These are all kind of groups that they belong to. And they were all given a difficult math test. But before they were given that test, they were separated into three groups. And so you've got one group that was given a questionnaire before their test about the roots that they're from, where their grandparents were from, what languages they speak, which sort of forced them to identify with their Asian culture, since all of them are Asian. And then in the next group, they were given a questionnaire that asked them about the dormitory policies, the gender policies in the dorms at Harvard. So this sort of forced them to identify as women. And again, all of the people in the experiment are Asian American women. So they're both women and they're Asian and they're human beings. They're all essentially the same group.
Students.
They're all college students. But it's forcing them to identify as very specific parts of their heritage or their gender. So there's one group that identifies as Asian before the test, one group that identifies as women before the test, and finally one control group who just is asked about their phone and cable bills to sort of just identify them as human beings. So there's these three groups, and then they give them a difficult math test, and lo and behold, the results of the test is, according to the stereotype, the group of Asian American women who identified specifically as Asian right before, due to the questionnaire, do better on the math test.
Wow.
Then the control group does a little worse than them, but still does well due to them all being Harvard students. And then finally, the group of women does the worst. And what's so strange about this is it's not they're doing bad because they're women, but it's actually they're doing worse because the stereotype of women that they are forced to identify with,
they're fulfilling that expectation,
is a negative one, right? So the negative stereotype of women being bad at math actually made them worse at this math
test. You know what it makes me think of, and bear with me, because at first you're going to think maybe I'm crazy, but it actually reminds me of the magic feather from Dumbo. Do you know what I'm talking about, Julian?
The magic feather
from
Dumbo.
So Dumbo was an elephant that could fly, but he can only fly if he had this magic feather. But then at the end of the movie, he has to fly without the magic feather, and he thinks he can't do it. But his friend tells him, you know, you were always able to do it all along. You never actually needed the magic feather.
Mm.
So I think it's like our thoughts and beliefs about ourselves almost inform what we can or can't do. I think that's what it
right.
comes down
to. I mean, the exciting part about this is that everybody at the end, when they were given their results, and in comparison to the rest of them, were very surprised with the results, because they had no idea that they had sort of been played by these experimenters, that they had been placed in their mind that they were very specifically Asian or very specifically women, and that it had an effect on them at all. It was all subliminal. It was all subconscious. And I think the Asian group, quote unquote, wasn't sitting there saying, I'm going to do better at this test because I'm Asian. They weren't sitting there saying, I'm going to do worse at this test because I'm a woman. But they're actually subconsciously just identifying in that way. And I think that's really interesting to be aware of going forward. When you belong to a great group, it's kind of awesome because you have a little bit of a special power behind you. You know, if you are, let's say, Asian and you're listening to this, in general, if you identify with that Asian group a lot, you probably will be doing better at math. Just a self-fulfilling kind of prophecy, which is kind of insane when you think about it, you know?
Fantastic. I'd like to identify with a wealthy person who's a benevolent philanthropist.
Very nice.
Right, exactly.
I'm aiming for that. And I'm going to go into all these meetings thinking.
And it sort of shows the power of the mind too. I mean, if you do decide to, let's say, you know, from now on, I will identify more with this beneficial idea of myself. That does manifest itself in a positive performance boost. Yeah. So let's say you're going in for a job interview and you say, I am
part...
That was
exactly what I was thinking about.
Right. You can say, I am part of this company. I'm smart enough to be at this company, or I am better than this.
I was thinking about a friend of mine who told me her experience of a job interview.
Yeah.
And she said that at about halfway through the interview, it was almost like she was interviewing the other person, and that's when she knew that the job, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it, like from like referencing the study that Julian just told us about, comes down to our thoughts and beliefs about ourselves,
mm-hmm.
and you know, really, I think when we believe we belong, that's almost as powerful as actually belonging.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it also connects kind of with what Loretta was saying last week, Loretta Bruning. She said, when you have a rush of a happy chemical, in this case oxytocin, say that I am creating this. You're doing it yourself. So when you want to belong to a group, say, I belong to this group. It will override the negative sense that you don't belong.
Yeah, I mean, and also when you have that negative sense sort of living in you and you don't really let it go, it does remove you kind of from that group. I mean, for those Asian people that perhaps say they don't really feel Asian or they don't really connect with their Asian culture, they might be worse at math.
Right.
And it's interesting. And so for all of our audience, I mean, do identify with those positive groups. I mean, really, there's a lot of power there. And it's exciting to identify with even more and more groups.
What's a positive group you identify with, Ben?
I mean, very broadly and very generally, I just identify, I guess, as a man on the most broadest surface level.
So you enjoy your manliness and being part of...
Yeah, I mean, I think it's... I enjoy connecting with other men. I mean, look, I enjoy connecting with women, too.
Sure.
But, you know, I do identify... Yeah. Yeah.
Does something unspoken happen when you feel a sense of belonging with men? Like, you know, if you were not allowed to talk, if you were in a room with men and women, would there be some kind of unspoken sense that you belong more to the men than to the women?
You know, I'm not sure, because it's like Julian said, there's a whole, you know, there's a whole list of groups and identities that we can have. So, you know, I might be in a group of men and women, I might be the only person that speaks English, and everyone else there might be speaking Portuguese. Then
right.
I would feel very much an
outsider.
That's
a very, very important group. I mean, your
language,
culture, your
yeah.
race, your language, that... I mean, when you can go to another country and speak their language,
right.
immediately it's like, oh, you are part of us. You know, this is, if your name even sounds like it's from the country that you go to. Like, let's say, Ben, you start speaking French in France. I mean, all of a sudden you are joining in that group, and it really allows you to feel like you belong there.
Yeah. Yeah, in a big way. I mean, and it's funny you mention that because, I mean, as you know, Julian, and as some of our listeners know, French was my first language. And when they were picking a name for me, they wanted to find a name that was, you know, equally common and pronounceable in both English and French, because I have a lot of family in France.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so that was one way to belong. But, you know, as we've also mentioned before in the show, Julian, we've both talked about this since Julian and I have a shared background of having... a father and a mother from two separate cultures.
Right.
And there's this belonging and a sort of alienation at the same time.
Right.
It's very interesting. And people who are sort of bicultural or, you know, have a dual nationality or different cultural makeup, whether it's different religions or languages or whatever, people can relate to that because you're kind of a part of both, but not really 100% part of either at the same time.
It's so interesting. And I think that's where our, I'm sure our audience listening right now and myself has always been sort of split up. And that's where it gets difficult to say, well, you know, for myself, I'm Asian and Italian. Am I Asian? Am I Italian? Am I either? You know, sometimes I'm like, well, I go to Italy. I don't really feel Italian because I don't speak it well enough. Or I grew up in America and I'm Italian American is more what I identify with.
Right.
But finally, you know, after putting the effort kind of into it and really psyching myself out a little bit, I do feel a lot more Asian. I visited the country. I learned the language. I tried the foods, and now I can kind of belong to both. And I'm pretty good at math. Yeah, and I mean, this is such exciting stuff. And we're coming up to 1:30 here today on the Positive Mind at 99.5 FM and WBAI. Really, really exciting stuff. And we're going to want to hear from you in our second half hour about what groups you belong to, where you sort of have felt like you belong, or maybe you felt like you wanted to belong but you didn't, and kind of all of that.
And where you can create the sense that you belong.
Right. Right.
Even if you don't belong now, say, oh, there's a place over there I could belong if I tried.
Right, and maybe there are groups that you can join into that maybe you don't feel like you can, but you actually have the power to join those groups, too.
Yeah, think about, you know what was a big one that I was thinking of? Deadheads.
No.
Right?
Gosh.
Like, when the Grateful Dead were still really touring a lot, and people kind of joined this huge traveling family, and just it really became a larger than life family.
A deadhead on the side of the road with just a sign that says deadhead. You're guaranteed a ride.
Right, and all of a sudden you become part of this group all over that's full of love and belonging and all kinds of stuff. And we have a little bit from Armand before we go into our music today. But stay tuned and make sure to call 212-757-5555. Give us a call after the break and let us know what you're thinking about all this.
My next story comes from an infant of 4 months who was sitting in my house, in my apartment. 4-month-old infant, 4 months, 5 months, a baby, right? So he's in there and he's there looking around. And you know the way babies look at everything and they don't pay attention to anything for too long. They're just kind of glancing. Well, all of a sudden, I was playing for their parents. I wanted to play a piece of music that I just acquired. It was a new digitally mastered version of Because by the Beatles. And it comes from something that the Beatles did that was just very, very special. But now the way it was digitally remastered, you hear the magnificence of the voices. So I just put this on for them to hear, and the baby froze. The baby stopped. The baby listened for the first time that the baby listened to anything. They told me this was remarkable. The baby stared at the speakers and heard something and just wouldn't take its attention away. And here's what I think happened. I think the voices created a sense of belonging to that baby, and the baby realized it was connected to something. I think the voices, as you're about to hear them, were about a sense of connection to each other. I think babies, before they're born, have a sense of connection. They're connected to the universe. I think when they're born, they feel ripped away. And then I think eventually they got to develop their sense of belonging again. But this particular baby, this day, as I watched, listened to this music, and it was magic. So if you have the opportunity, I want you to close your eyes. Right, share this with this 4-month-old baby. And imagine you're a baby hearing this sound for the first time in your life. And I tell you, my friends, this is for you.
Because the world is right.
Blues.
Because by the Beatles, a beautiful, beautiful remaster of a legendary song.
Sounds so crisp, man. So yeah. Clean.
I belong.
Yeah, and you're listening to The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. And we're excited to hear from all of you about your feelings on what we've been talking about today. Belonging, what groups you belong to.
Yeah, where do you feel connected? Where do you feel at home, right? Because that's part of it, too, is... a sense of home, isn't it? I mean, that's what belonging comes down to, where we feel at home, where we feel safe.
Exactly.
Trust. Where we feel a part of something. So that's what we're going to ask our callers today. I'm just wondering what makes you feel belong? What makes you feel a part of something? Whether it's a family group, maybe it's a work group, maybe it's something besides that. We talked recently about... how, you know, people root for sports teams as a way to find a sense of belonging and family.
Where can you let down your guard?
Right. That's a big part of it, too.
Where do you not have to be vigilant? You can trust the person next to you or the experience that you're going through. Where? So that's what we're interested in today.
Let's take a caller. We have Austin on the line. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Hey, Austin.
Okay. I've been long-time caller of the Positive Mind. I haven't called in a while. So,
great. Do you belong today?
Pardon?
Do you feel a sense of belonging today?
to which group?
The Positive Mind.
Oh, I don't think we have to ask him. I think he's part of the Positive Mind. Yeah. I mean, if you're a long-time caller, Austin, it's great hearing from you again.
Has that been established? Okay.
Yeah.
Here's a funny thing which I've thought about regarding this for a long time. I think... In my case, I've never had a great sense of tribal identification, and however you define that, that can be, you know, as you guys just said, many ways. It can be a corporate tribe, it can be racial, ethnic, national, religious.
Right.
And I have never had a real close family, nor a lot of great close friends either. And I've thought over the years, you know, it's kind of like a chicken, the egg. It has part of it been my disposition? And I think it's both. I think on some level, it's kind of a perfect storm scenario. I was born into a situation, a socialized situation, where there was a good degree of alienation. And on top of that, I am someone who kind of likes being to myself a bit too much for my own good, in a sense.
Yeah,
my
question for you is, do you feel kind of complete on your own?
You know, complete is just such an all-encompassing word.
Sure.
Could you just qualify that a little bit more? What do you mean?
Let's say we got a different caller, and that caller said something along the lines of, I don't fit in any of these groups, but I feel so lonely, and I'm so afraid, and I'm looking for a group to fit in with. And I haven't heard that from you necessarily, just that you said, I don't really feel like I belong to these groups, but you haven't said that there's any discomfort that comes along with it. So
no, there is discomfort, but I think at this point I more or less take it as a given that I'm one of these people who wanders in and out of the human circle of connectedness. I'm not someone who has a group or even groups, but I have these vague allegiances, I guess. And then, you know, and this sounds kind of sad in the way it is. I'm not trying to minimize it. And at the same time, I don't want to portray it as the most drastic thing. I am someone, as I said, that likes keeping to myself, and I'm not of necessity the prime candidate for someone that wants to be. In other words, I'm neither a leader nor a follower.
Yeah, and Austin, have you taken the Enneagram test?
Yeah, I think I did. I a long time ago. I think I'm a 7. I'm not sure.
Okay, I was gonna say, from the way you describe yourself, you sound like a 6.
Mm-hmm.
And the 6 is kind of like the way you said, the person who wants to, who in at once almost is a contradiction, right? Right, doesn't necessarily want to be a leader, but also doesn't necessarily want to be led.
And then there's also a lot of that in the 7 too. Although the 7 does it in a kind of different way, in a sort of like trying to be part of everything and maybe sometimes not being part of anything at all. I think the 7 ends up doing it that way, while the 6 maybe sort of sits outside of it and says, "I don't know if I belong to anything."
Absolutely.
So the 7 is a little bit more voyeuristic, right?
Well, you're a pejorative, either.
By the way,
the 7 is.
I think there's a more enlightened way of being voyeuristic. Of, you know, people who write and people who think a lot and philosophers. So I'm not contextualizing voyeuristic in any kind of period sense. But I've always been an observer. You know.
Yeah, and that sounds more like a 6. That sounds more like a 6.
And I'm also someone who, in my head, would like to be more engaged, but I don't necessarily always have the nervous system to deal with it. So what my head would want to do, you know, and I'm someone who loves to party and dance, but there's a point where I have to retreat from that. So I love stimulation, but to a point.
Right.
And it's not even the, let me make one more point, because I don't want to take that much time, but it's not even that intense kind of tribal stimulation of a party is wonderful. It's the low grade annoyances which are cumulative and more annoying for someone like me. The little indignities are stuff that I have more problems dealing with than you know the big fanfare kind of event, which if I'm in a mood for, I can have a great old time at.
You are a 7, Austin. You do like to dabble in a lot of different things. Look,
we are 6.5 or something.
But before you go,
thanks so much.
Look,
okay, I'll let you go pick up some other people.
Good,
thanks
keep
so
calling us. Stay part of
have
the family.
Bye bye.
Okay,
thank
bye-bye.
You for calling, Austin.
212-757-5555 is the number to call. Austin makes a great point and uses a word that I think is very important. He used the word tribal. And, you know, in recent weeks, we've been talking a lot about how our behaviors and our actions are oftentimes almost evolutionary in nature. Mm-hmm. And we're descended from groups of people in the past who tended to play it safe.
Yeah.
We're also, we exhibit traits of those that came before us, right? And those who were most successful in reproducing. And
if your tribe has a code, if it has a written or unwritten code that you can't stray from the tribe, or you can stray from the tribe, does and leads to a lot of different behaviors by people. And I got a sense from Austin that he's a guy who chooses where he belongs, which is what we're really aiming for. You know, a lot of people feel alienated from their family of origin, where they came from, their original tribe.
Mm-hmm.
They feel alienated from New York City or the culture that they're in. But they do find a way, and then that can be painful. But
they find their place.
You do have to choose. And it sounded to me that Austin was a guy who chooses where he belongs.
And I do think there is a way for everyone to sort of find that place, that niche, where they feel they can belong, even after a lifetime of not belonging. I think there's always an opportunity to find a place of belonging.
Right. I mean, there are the people that feel the most comfortable in their AA group. You know, out of their family, their friends, they find that group where they find themselves feeling the most included and the most accepted for who they are. And it's not strange to feel, a very strong disconnect or a very strong connect to your family, because that tends to be the one that matters the most to people from the start.
Right.
Yeah. We've actually got Mary Robinson on the line. Mary Robinson, you there?
Yes, I am.
How's it going? Well, how are you feeling about what we're talking about today? What's your kind of idea about belonging?
I personally feel very congruent because of my background of Native American, part East Indian, as well as the different European countries, part English and Irish.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
And also part Chinese and Japanese.
Which do you choose to belong to the most, or do you, Mary?
Well, I feel very connected with the Native Americans, but right. Since I've been around all ethnicity equilaterally, I can relate to all of them. But the thing is that the black Americans, and I'm part Ethiopian, which is black, well, they excluded me also because I play classical music.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh my.
I'm a medium brown complexion with the Jewish and also Indian features, and they have battled me from day one.
Mary, you sound like you've had a lot of choices in your life. Look at this, all of this rich culture choices that you could make, and you pick the Native American. What is it about being Native American that you like the most?
Well, one thing, I am a strong advocate of holistic medicine.
Uh-huh.
And I listen to Dr. Gary Null fervently because my Ethiopian grandfather, he healed all diseases. He healed the coup de grace of Alabama and also the poor as well. So the coup de grace, they took him all over the Atlantic Ocean because he could heal anything that the doctors couldn't heal.
Wow. It's very interesting hearing from your perspective, Mary. Actually, you're talking about all of these different ethnicities and
yes.
Like we were talking about tribal affiliations and sort of yeah. finding one that you identify with the most. And actually being mixed race myself mm-hmm. and being raised in New York City, which I'm assuming you're also from New York City, right?
I'm from nearby Jersey City.
Right. So you're essentially in this melting pot, you know, your whole
yes.
life. And it's weird because we become part of a special group, which is this sort of mixed race group where we find ourselves not totally identifying with, let's say, your Ethiopian roots, not totally identifying yes. with the Jewish roots or the Chinese roots or the the Native American roots, but sort of finding what you just believe in, which ends up coming down to the Native American side of things, which
yes.
lives in a holistic way. And it's great talking to another mixed race person like myself, and it was so great hearing
yes.
from you today on our show, and thank you so much for calling in.
But may I just say one thing before we hang up, please?
Sure.
Thank you. Oprah is also in my family on both sides. She's very mixed.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I'm a classical and jazz musician. My son plays with the Spirit of Life Ensemble. I know you've heard of them. They're a world-renowned group.
Fantastic, Mary. Mary, you have a great, great spirit and a lot of
thank
good,
you.
Good
and,
things
and
behind
you. And claim the black people that I was a kid playing classical and jazz music. They couldn't handle it.
Hey, listen, do you have a CD? Send us a CD.
Send you a CD?
Yeah, can you send us a CD here to the Positive
Mind? I could probably make one. I had a professional CD, but I lost it when I moved.
Okay, Mary. All right.
But
well,
I have worked. I'm an extemporaneous musician. I play from all genres of music, and I even sing opera.
Thank you so much. Fantastic, Mary.
Thank you for sharing that with us, Mary. We're going to try to get to a couple more calls today, but thank you for
all
sharing
right.
your experience with us, and it's great to belong to so many
please?
Groups. Oh,
yeah, we're on 119 West 57th Street. You can find us online. Just Google The Positive Mind.
Positive
yep.
Mind, all right.
Thanks again.
Thank you so much, Mary.
Thank you for talking with me. Thank you very kindly.
Take care. 212-757-5555 is the number to call, talking about belonging, tribal identities, major differences in identities as far as like maybe a professional identity, a social identity, and where we get these senses of belongings and the groups and the places and the people we turn to for that belonging. Wondering where you, the listeners, find a place of belonging.
And the joy of belonging. Mary sounded like she was full of life from all of the aspects of belonging that she has. a musician, Chinese, Indian,
sure,
Ethiopian, etc., other things.
Let's hear from someone else. We have Beverly on the line. Beverly, thanks for calling in.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Anytime.
I just wanted to bring up the fact that the group that we're all a part of, I do believe, is the human race. And to me, there's only one race, the human race.
Sure.
There are different ethnicities and cultures, right, but we all come from the same
I absolutely, absolutely agree with you, Beverly. I didn't mean to sort of differentiate ourselves by talking about race, but just in fact, when I mentioned that study about, you know, identifying with different groups, sort of, it just does affects our psyche. And it's not necessarily, I'm trying to say that we're different because you've got a group of women. You could also have the quiz that I mentioned. I don't know if you heard earlier in the show when I was talking about this study where sort of identifying with the Asian race or identifying as a woman or identifying just sort of as a human being before taking a math test kind of affected the performance on them. That,
yeah,
that control group who does sort of identify themselves as the human group did the medium in this, you know, the medium best on this test. And I think we all most definitely are a part of that human group. And I didn't mean to differentiate that. And I hope
but
that wasn't coming off that way.
Yeah, it's all about perception because,
right,
as that study can clearly show, because you can perceive, you know, anything about yourself and it will affect your actions in the world, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what's so interesting is that your, you know, a positive perception of yourself affects your actual performance. And that's what's so exciting to us here. You know, in the positive mind, we try to take something and say, well, look at this thing and let's see all the sides of it and let's see what we can benefit from in all of our human conditions. And thank you for bringing that up. But do you have anything that you feel like you belong to specifically? I know, of course, you belong to the human race, and honestly, some people don't feel like they belong to that.
That's true.
But
that's true.
Yeah.
Actually, I could relate to both the gentleman that said he likes to be alone, or, you know, is
Austin. Yeah.
Austin, yes.
Yeah.
And I can also relate to the woman that was just on the phone because I relate. I could be a loner very much, but I can also relate to all different groups and have all my life. So.
Have you noticed the change in yourself when you identify with certain groups in throughout your life, sort of how you've identified with different groups, how that's affected you?
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey. I've had a kind of unique experience. I grew up in a town where my family, it was before my family moved there, it was a lily white town. I'm African American.
Right.
So I went to a school. My elementary school, I was the only black African-American in my entire elementary school.
Wow.
And until I got to junior high, I was the only one, except for 1 year, Pam Poitier, who's Sidney Poitier's daughter, was 2 years older than I was. And then by the time I got to high school, they had a few African-Americans. When I say a few, you could count on one hand.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then I went to Yale, so I had that experience.
Wow,
and I'm an artist.
That's great. I mean, you sort of found your groups. Did you feel separate from that group in school when you were growing up, or did you feel like you kind of found your ways of belonging to it also?
Well, similar to, I guess, the other lady, I had friends in all the different quote-unquote groups. I had friends, the smart kids. I had friends who were the not-so-smart. I had friends who were considered the cool ones, you know. So...
So you sound like
all of them.
You sound like a very adaptable person who kind of finds their base in the human race, which I really appreciate. And I'm glad you called and let us know about that and reminded us of this sort of larger group that we really are all a part of. And I appreciate that. And you're also part of the Callers to the Positive Mind group now, as of now, a part of that group with Austin and Mary.
A very elite and special group of people, by the way.
But yeah, thank you so much for calling in, Beverly. We're going to try to get one more call in before we end our show, but thank you for letting us know how you're feeling about this.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
And 212-757-5555. We have time for one more quick call if you want to weigh in on this topic. Range of perspectives
here.
What do you appreciate
about being in part of the human race, Ben?
Well, I mean, it's a blessing to wake up every day and have another day of life. I mean, on the most basic level, you know, I do try to appreciate that. Because it is, you know, it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about you? Where do you belong, Kevin?
I belong here at the DeMille Center with you guys here in the studio. I guess outside, I'm a swimmer, so I belong with a lot of guys who swim. I swim in the mornings with some people and also my racquetball team.
Oh, that's a good one.
So I'm one of those guys who belongs with a sports team.
There's definitely a thing.
Doing an activity.
Which is exciting. Also belonging to sort of a place, an environment, not only a group of people, but, you know, perhaps belonging in the forest or belonging in the water.
A lot of people feel a sense of belonging at the beach.
Yeah,
a lot of people feel like a deep connection to that.
It's a large enough and magnificent place that kind of reminds you how much you are a part of this earth. And I feel like that's a really good place to kind of shock you back into, wow, this is what I'm part of. This is this beautiful thing. We actually have one more caller on the line. Marie, can you hear us?
Yes, hello.
Hey, how's it going? Can you get off a speakerphone? Is that possible?
Sorry about that.
No, no problem, no problem. So how are you feeling about this subject? We only have a couple of minutes,
good.
But what do you belong to? Maybe any interesting things you've found in your path on life?
Yes, I really enjoy the podcast. I enjoy your show. I enjoy WBAI. I'm a long-time listener. I think
Thank
it's like 30 years now since I've been in Albany, New York.
Oh, wow. So you were listening to the very beginnings of Positive Mind. That's amazing.
And I'm now in New York City, back in New York City. I was born in Haiti. My parents are Haitian. But we came here when I was 5 years old to New York City. Well, first Canada, New York City. So I feel like a lot of your callers, I have different groups that I kind of identify with and I've adapted.
Right.
I grew up in a Jewish neighborhood, then a Puerto Rican neighborhood. And I also went with Italians and Irish. So.
Oh, yeah, that's New York for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is, to give you a point of reference, I'm older than probably you guys. So this was in the early 70s, mm-hmm. where Mount Eden, the Bronx, was all Jewish. We were the only black family on the block. But I had friends from all the ethnicities. We played outside back in those days, kicked them out to play and went into supper.
Right.
So I think I come across sometimes as more Puerto Rican, because I had Puerto Ricans in my as classmates.
You know, it's interesting, Marie. You have an experience that's really common to a lot of Americans and New Yorkers in specific, which is the immigrant experience of coming here at a very young age and then, wondering, do I belong to, the culture that I came from or the culture that I've kind of always known?
And they kind of both pull at you. You guys didn't really realize that.
Right.
And then I guess one day, I mean, it took me 50 years probably to figure it out that, hey, why do I have to pick one? I can belong to all of them.
Sure.
And people have a problem with some people like me, but I decided that's their problem because nature and nurture, I mean, they go hand in hand. And I still am very, very proud and super Haitian and proud of my Haitian roots, but I'm also proud of growing up in New York.
Look, I think if there's anyone who, has a problem with the way that, you are... you view yourself, then that is definitely their problem.
People try to label you and pigeonhole you and things.
Sure.
So I'm very eclectic person. I'm an artist. I also like the sciences, but I paint, and I didn't know Haitian art was a big thing, and people call my art Haitian art. I mean, that I just express myself in painting and poetry. So it's interesting all the little niches I found that I can fit into. And it's important to know that depending on where you are, your environment, I think at least with me, I adapt, and I see myself doing things differently depending on where I'm with, and it's not a bad thing. I think you want to feel a sense of belonging, and it's like a survival technique, if you will.
Yeah, our sort of ability to adapt to whatever environment, what group we join into, and then find a home in that place, I think is really important. So thank you so much for sharing. We're going to
at
the end of our show, but thank you so much for calling in, and make sure to stay tuned to The Positive Mind Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 1 p.m. here on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Thank you, Marie.
Thank you, and for all of our listeners, thank you for being a part of the WBAI group and the Positive Mind group and calling in. And stay tuned tomorrow, 1 p.m., for more of The Positive Mind. Go to thepositivemind.com to listen to our archives, the podcasts on iTunes, and send us an email at positivemind@wbai.org. Thank you for tuning in, and I'm Julian Joiello.
I'm Ben Starr.
And Kev O'Donoghue.
Thank you very much. Shit.